Hey everybody, this is Drew.
And it's Blake.
And you're listening to the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Everybody, welcome to episode 95, and for those who've been keeping track, you know what it is. Today is an offering up to the Gamefly deities, the sacrifices of the ones we didn't finish. Now, before I get into the actual games, we're going to be tackling three games. We can go probably... Maybe.
We'll say three. Sometimes if two go too long, we'll cut it off. We don't want the podcast to be too terribly long. We'll see how far we get into it. But it is a weird situation where it's something Blake didn't play, something I didn't play, and something Blake didn't play again. So we're not sure how it's going to go with that way.
But we'll try to get to them reasonably. Before we do all that, I will go through our social media preamble. You can find us on all the social media platforms. Just search the name of the podcast, you know, one of the coolest names ever. You can keep track of our comings and goings, but most importantly, we want people to tune into our Lock, Stock, and Two Smoke Controllers presents Lock, Stock, and Two Smoke Controllers co-op endeavors Twitch channel that we stream with our podcast editor and cousin Brian.
So he's editor first now, not cousin first?
Yeah, it's business first, then family. Got that. And now you can, and lastly, we have a Patreon and a store. Patreon, of course, everyone on the internet has one of those. It's just to help support maintaining the cost of the podcast. And really, it's just paying our artist, which is Mladen Markovic, a.k.a. Devious Pixel, as well as giving breadcrumbs to Brian. And
we make enough money on the Patreon, we'd pay him, of course.
We give him a free membership to the Patreon. That's basically how we pay him. And we visit for family vacations.
And use his pool.
And yeah, and use his pool and his sunscreen. And his hair conditioning and drink his drinks. So he's really paying us at this point in kindness. The links to all this stuff is found in the show notes. If you don't want to try to remember any of it, just scroll down and boop, click on whichever social media platform you prefer. With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and dive into our first game. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, this is a game I didn't play, but
We've talked about this on the podcast. Where this is how we do games sometimes, especially Gamefly games. One of us, obviously, we don't play them at the same time because it's one copy, but one of us will play it, and if it's the game's taking a weird turn or something's not adding up that we don't like, we'll warn the other person, and we'll kind of go from there and not make sure we don't both play it. And that's what ends up with the Gamefly game getting sent back after maybe one or two nights of a rental. And that's the case with this one.
So the first game I'm diving into is called Tormented Souls. Now, it originally came out August 26th, 2021 on everything, and it is co-developed, first by Dual Effects, and then second by Abstract Digital. Now, Dual Effects, both companies are actually based out of Chile, which I think is kind of cool. I had a much harder time nailing down information on Dual Effect. The only thing they had that gave me any notable information was a Twitter page. Like, they had a website, but it didn't give me anything. Just that they worked on this game, and this was the only game they worked on.
Weird.
And that they've been, as far as I could tell, according to the Twitter, they've been an established company only since January 2020. And that's literally it. I looked and I could not find anything. Now, I did find more about Abstract Digital, but they're a software development company.
Not just video game software?
Not just video, but they're strictly a software, like I said, a software development company. And all the software that runs Tormented Souls, they did. Now,
hopefully you'd think that'd be their contribution.
Yeah, well, because Digital Effect like supplied the story and the concept art and stuff like that. And like, hey, we want to do this, but I don't know how. So he like sublet it to this company that made the assets. They turned his you know, I say his, but I don't know for sure, but they just turned it into the game that exists with editorial notes and stuff like that, which is incredibly strange. I've never heard of a game being done like this. It's incredibly crazy. Now, digital software, it's weird. Abstract Digital, rather. They've only made two games. They made this and another one called Rios Delaware, and it was a platform puzzler as well. So you have, like, I guess, a platform puzzler, and then we do this, which is a third-person survival horror slash puzzler. More in the vein of, like, what, OG Resident Evils and Alone in the Dark, I was told. Or I read, rather, that they drew inspiration for. Now, I didn't play this at all.
Yeah, I played it first because I was kind of curious about it.
Now, like, graphically, because I watched a trailer. I did some of my research. Graphically, it looks really well made. It's got a nice aesthetic. They're going for real, not photorealism, but they are going for realism.
It looks like it's almost like the pre-rendered backgrounds of like Resident Evil, like early Resident Evils and stuff like that, and some early PlayStation 1 games. But it looks like a modern, more like the Resident Evil 1 remake that was on the GameCube and later ported to the other consoles. Except for the people, like people don't always look as good as the pre-rendered backgrounds can look. I did play this for, I don't know how many hours. I probably should have pulled that up. I quit because, and I told Blake to not bother because there's a lot of, it's really easy to get disoriented and die in this game. My TA's not tracking that I played this at all. Maybe I didn't get any achievements in it.
Because I think it's on PlayStation, Drew, wasn't it?
Oh, we did rent it on PlayStation, that's right.
Because it's not on Xbox, it's on PlayStation.
Well, it's on Xbox, actually, but I rented it. That's funny, I put my TA up because I rented it because it's on a disc on GameFly, and because I almost bought it on Xbox, and I kind of figure I don't really care what console I play on if we can rent it first to check. Because I almost bought this a couple of times on Xbox. Now this is lesson learned, thanks to GameFly. To like, if it's not on, because there's a lot of things that are on disc on PlayStation that they don't put on disc on Xbox for some reason. But anyway, I did play this on PlayStation, and due to that, I don't know how long I played it. I only played it like maybe one night, and then one more time after that. But you are in this course, because it's really reminiscent of Resident Evil 1. So you're kind of, you go to this mansion, you're sent to this mansion from some letter from somebody, maybe the main character's sister, I don't remember, but you're sent to this mansion and you get knocked out and you wake up and then you're just kind of free to start exploring. The initial walking around and exploring is fine. It's very Resident Evil 1, which I played through I beat Resident Evil 1 the remake, not the original game, so I kind of thought I'd have more of a handle on how to play this game. But you can't really avoid me. I guess you do spend a lot of the time, like I ran through Resident Evil 1 basically avoiding, because you have enough space to like kind of run around and avoid all the zombies. Most of the zombies, you can minimize combat in Resident Evil 1, which I guess you're supposed to kind of do in this, which is what I was trying to do, because you really only have, ended up with a pipe or something, and then a nail gun. I think it was a nail gun in this. And none of those things have any real stopping power. Enemies tend to just attack you anyway, and ended up dying multiple times, and it uses the old classic save system where you have to like stop in a room and like save and stuff like that.
Like ink ribbons?
Like ink ribbons. I don't know if it was ink ribbons or something else in this. Maybe we'll see here in a minute because we got a gameplay video in the background. But I ended up dying a couple of times and having to like redo whole sections, and maybe that's fun back in the PlayStation era of things. But for me, I was like, the first time I did, I was like, okay, just one more time. And I got past all that part and ran past the enemies and killed a couple of them and made my way through it. But the second time I died and I realized how much I had to redo, I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna spend however many. And the game is not even supposed to be that long. I'm not gonna spend all my time redoing sections because I can't keep myself alive, because I'm not good enough at this. It's pretty much what happened. You probably ain't got any thoughts on it. Hey, it's just me talking about the game.
Because when I look at everything, I do know that the main character is Carolyn Walker, and she's investigating missing twin girls, and she turns up into this mansion that's a mansion. It's an old school mansion turned present day hospital slash insane asylum. The Carolyn Walker is voiced by a lady named JT, and that's literally all I could find out. Like, her initials on IMDb and everything, it just said JT. And this is the only thing she'd done.
I don't remember her performance, if it was any good or not.
Now, everything I've also read about the game, it gives it rave, absolutely rave reviews. 90s, 80s, 95s, 100s.
I get that it's probably doing everything right. I just don't like this style of dealing with the stuff, playing a game and like having to like...
It's supposed to add, I guess, to the suspense. The
redoing of a section of a game is not nothing I really have time for, honestly. My games, I need to like, you know, play it and keep moving forward. Like, I need a sense of progress. I don't want to be sitting around, enemy hit me one too many times, now I got to redo the past hour. I just cannot.
No.
Cannot keep doing that. And I know that's a thing. That's a part of the, what do you call it? The tense factor. I want to be scared because the game's scary, not scared because I have to redo this section.
Yeah. I will say, this is completely a thought in my head, because I guess we're watching a little bit of a gameplay, and the main character, Carolyn, she has this bandage covering up half her face.
She wakes up and her eye's missing.
Yeah.
Found out why.
But I'm getting, for those who've played Final Fantasy IX, just looking at her face, torso, and above, I'm getting a very heavy Beatrix vibe. She's got I don't say she has big hair, but she has flowing hair, and then a big old, it's not like an eye patch, it's like a big old gauze thing taking up half her face. And I just look at her, it's like, that looks like Beatrix for some reason, and I don't know
why you're thinking that, besides the eye thing.
And the hair.
She ain't got hair, nothing like Beatrix.
What are you talking about? Yeah, she does. When's the last time you played IX?
Beatrix has huge, long, blonde hair, like brunette hair, doesn't she? Her hair is like a bob.
I don't know. It's also dark and shadowy. Anyway. It's
very dark in that game. Yeah.
But everything I read about the game was just, I'm looking at it right now on, this is just on Steam. This isn't everyone, but look at Steam. Of the 3,000 reviews, 93% of them are very positive, which means on a scale of 1 to 10, there'd be 7, 8, 9, 10s, or even 8, 9, 10s, rather. Like, everyone seems to just absolutely slobber on this game. Because people love the Resident Evils. People love the old school ones. Mm-hmm. And this even said in their...
Because you don't get this in modern horror. You really don't. Like, most, you get really action-y. Like, even the new Resident Evils are very action-y. People thought the 7, before 8 came out, like, 7 was, like, going to be slow and methodical. When I played 7, it had some slow parts, but 7's still just an action horror game. Nowhere near as scary as people made it out to be. And then 8's just a straight action game.
A lot of people are calling it a revival of the genre. The fixed camera. Because it's a fixed camera perspective.
Yeah.
And they laud the puzzles being, quote, fiendish. Like, some of the puzzles are incredibly difficult or even mind-bendy. Mm-hmm. Which, for me, in general, I don't play video games to play puzzles.
Listen to this podcast, you know we don't like puzzles. I had a little walkthrough for this. I forget where I got the walkthrough from. Probably
Neo Seeker or Power Picks.
Yeah, some of our normal go-tos. I knew where I was going, where I was supposed to be going, and I had maps and stuff. It was just the dying.
Well, it has a great intro. Like, the whole, as the camera pans around, you see your main character in a bathtub hooked up to medical equipment, and she's got this viscous fluid covering her body. And I guess some sort of breathing apparatus just shoved down her throat, and she has to pull it out.
It's pretty gross, and
regurgitate whatever was in her. And then that's when she notices she's missing the eye. She gets out. It's a great, pulls you in, and it looks gorgeous. Honestly, it really looks really pretty. They did well. I'm assuming Abstract Digital over Dual Effect, since they did all the software and everything. But yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. So, like I said, I didn't get terribly far. I did a lot of running around, so I don't want to harp on the game with my negativity. If you like classic survival horror and stuff like that, you'll probably be a big fan of this. Like I said, Blake said it's got rave reviews, so I don't want to spend too much time like talking bad about it. At least on Xbox, I imagine across all platforms, it's $20, so it's probably worth every bit of that. And I guess it has replay value. People like to try to speedrun games like this. It says 15 to 20 hours on TA for a completion. So it's up to you.
Just kind of some extra tidbits about it as I'm scrolling through everything.
Yeah.
There's a game mechanic that is just called Another Dimension. And here's a quote. "Nothing is quite what it seems in Winter Lake. Mirrors provide a path to an alternate reality and another place and time. By crossing through these shimmering gateways, Carolyn can manipulate the very fabric of reality in surprising ways."
Yeah, I did do that one time.
You did?
Yeah. I remember going through a mirror and worrying I was going to die in there.
That's fair.
It's like a mirror version of the map you're on, of the main game.
Oh, so everything's like reversed or mirrored, rather?
Yeah, it's, I remember something like that. You had to like solve a puzzle, and then I think it changed something back in the other version.
Well, that's so cool.
Which is cool, yeah, but...
It's also not the first time I've seen that done, but that's still really cool.
Yeah, but mostly worried about dying.
And that's, yeah. First and foremost, I hate repeating myself in games. Like, now, as we played through, what was that game we played?
Any Dark Souls game?
Yeah, that can be very, but you can all go, you can plan and do a different thing. And even with this, you can do some pre-planning and stuff. But repeating myself continuously is annoying, no matter... Little Nightmares 2, even how fast that reload time was, even though I had to wait 2 seconds for, what's his name, 5'9", or Clyde, whatever.
You complained about that 2 seconds, too.
Yeah, oh yeah. So if I'm having to repeat myself 30 minutes at a time, or, I gotta repeat this 20, because I gotta work my way to this, no, I will quit a game so fast, I'm not waiting.
Yeah, you would have been pissed playing this.
Yeah.
That's like, why I told you not to bother, you've been so mad. The first time you died, you'd have been mad, very, very mad.
Now, if there's some accessibility features, or something, you know.
You just auto-save when you walk through a door. I know that takes away some of the fear of dying, but the fear of dying... I say I want to be scared of a creature because it's scary, not scared because I'm going to... Because
I'm like, if I lose this...
I think I heard other podcasts talk about the fear of losing progress is usually greater than the fear of anything in a game, and that's not the right way to do it.
Mm-mm.
I don't feel like...
You look at some of my favorite survival horror games are the Dead Spaces. But those are also the same thing. Like, you only save at...
Yeah. I don't remember now, or if in the remake or the originals, but it's been so long since I played them that I don't remember if there is an autosave.
No, I remember.
Yeah.
Maybe bosses or something.
I remember being worried of losing progress in that game. You know, die in that game.
You die violently.
But I don't remember that ever being an issue, though. Maybe, it's been, 10, 15 years since I played Dead Space.
But, yeah, regardless. Do you have anything you want to add? Do you have, like, was there the enemy that was chasing you? Was it that murdered you a bunch? Do you remember what it looked
like? I've seen two, three enemy types. One's the guy in a wheelchair. It's the first one you see. And who knows why it exists. It's a guy in a wheelchair that has huge, like, garden shears on his hands. And it just rolls at you and kind of hits you with this thing. When you first mess with him,
it's just Edward Scissorhands. He's just old now.
Yeah, he's just old in the wheelchair. You hit him with a crowbar. The problem is they keep hitting you. You get little healing items and stuff like that. You can heal yourself, but you only have obviously so many healing items. You have a crowbar you can hit him with, and then eventually, like you said, the nail gun, but nothing has any stopping power. You knock him down, and sometimes you knock him down, they don't die. So you gotta like go over and keep hitting them with the crowbar until they die. I can't remember if stuff comes back. I was trying to kill stuff because I couldn't remember if it was going to come back to life and keep harassing me or not. But it was that something that crawled on the ground and something in a room that like chased me around a table until I was able to like the door unlocked. I'm going to forget to mention, because this is going to come up again in another game we're going to do later in the podcast. But she is carrying a lighter and all this right here. And if you're not having any light, you do die. And I hate that mechanic. Like you like rushing to I know it's part of being scary. I don't know if there's a story reason in this, and I don't want to spoil the other game just yet, but there's another game we played recently that we're working our way through still, actually, that has pretty much an identical mechanic, honestly, except she has a lighter that doesn't go out. The other one has matches that do go out. I don't like darkness killing you as a mechanic, but you know, they don't, like I said before, they don't make video games for us. If they did, they'd all be probably the same and boring.
Oh yeah. If any of that,
is what's annoying about the lighter thing, and that's part of what was ended up getting me killed too, is you have to like unequip the lighter and equip the crowbar to attack somebody. So you have to like unequip, hope stand somewhere where you're hoping, 'cause you're turning lights on and off all throughout the game, or turning power on, turning lights on, run through the dark, run into an enemy, run back to the light, or try to get around them, or run back to the light, equip your crowbar, let them come at you in the light, sometimes at a funny angle because of the fixed camera angles, and they come at you suddenly. Sometimes you're not ready to get your swing in, and then they get a couple of hits in and you're dead. So yeah, so then switching off of the lighter onto the crowbar was just open a menu, switch, close a menu, which is all classic stuff that maybe people, I don't know. I think people my age or a little older than me would probably like that kind of stuff, but I didn't play these games. We spent most of our time actually with Resident Evils when we were young, watching our cousin Daniel play them.
Oh yeah.
Letting them suffer.
I think just recently I played for the first time the remake or remaster, or I guess remake of RE2.
Yeah, you played all the way through too. I need to go back and try it again.
Played it on easy because I'm what you might call a baby backpack.
Yeah, I played through because I wanted to play it because I knew they're doing all these remakes. So I played through all the way through 1, all the way through 0, and then I got to 2, and I played on normal, and it was just like dying all the time, and I was like, this sucks, and like zombies weren't dying when I shot them. I hate things that just don't die when you shoot it. But Blake ended up playing Resident Evil 2 on easy and going all the way through it. So then we had that on GameFly. I probably didn't have that on GameFly. We had it on GameFly, but didn't talk about it because you actually beat it and I didn't. Or did we talk about that?
I don't think we ever did.
But
that may have been
something I might go back to between 2 and 3, and now the remake of 4, which people rave up the remake of 4. We want a remake of 5. The five and six. Well, we didn't like 6 either, but 5 is one of our favorites, and it's one of the first ones that people started really not liking was Resident Evil 5. And I've played the Resident Evil 5 like 4 or 5 times.
It's also action based.
And co-op helps makes it more fun. I really hope there's a remake of 5 that has the graphics and stuff of 4. That'd be very, very dope. I guess we should wrap this game up.
Yeah.
Move on to another game. So you can talk about a game that you played for a couple of nights that I didn't touch. This is $20. If you're a fan of the classic Resident Evil style of video games, you'll really I think you'll really enjoy this. And it's a rave review. So the things they did right. So I guess I would recommend it, even though I didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks entertaining. Moving on to our second game, we played Tokyo Xanadu. Now, the version we played was on for the PS4, which was like an extended cut, and it had a little, prefix of...
EX Plus.
EX Plus, yeah. Now, it originally came out on the Vita, September 30th, 2015, and it wasn't until basically 2 years later where it came out and would come out on PS4, Windows, and then it wasn't until very recently, in 2023, did it come out on the Switch, but Japan only. Now, Tokyo Xanadu is developed by a company we thoroughly enjoy, Nihon Falcom. A lot of people just call them Falcom. Mm-hmm. Now, interesting side note about that is they got their name. It's a combination of two things. It was inspired by the Millennium Falcon, which is both Falcom. They decided to just change the N to an M to avoid any sort of attempt at being sued. And Nihon is actually a native name of Japan. Is what I hate to call them natives, but it's what people in Japan used to call Japan as a whole, was Nihon. And that's where they got their name. And so they're responsible for quite a few things, actually. The three top things in particular are the Yiz series, the Legend of Heroes series, and then the Trails series. Trails of the Sky, Trails of Cold Steel, Trails of...
Which of Heroes is that series?
Oh, they have it split as two separate things, because Legend of Heroes is something... different.
That's Legend of Heroes, Trails in the Sky.
Oh, they haven't broken down and their thing is two separate entities.
No, that's all the same. Legend of Heroes, yeah.
My bad.
It's the same 8, 9, 10 game franchise.
So there's a good bit to say about them, so bear with me. They've been around since March of 1981. They are one of the oldest active video game companies in Japan. Actually, this is one of the oldest active video game companies, period. So they've been around for a while. So I'm sure a lot of companies existed back then and were surely shut down. They are actually, how do I explain this? They are considered in creating the groundwork for action RPGs and the JRPG genre as we know it. Mm-hmm. Now, I think, if they came out in 81, then they definitely did it before Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy came out in 87, the first one did. So they definitely laid the groundwork for action RPGs and JRPGs in either genre.
Yeah.
Now the crazy thing is there with this being this huge epitome of things, like they created and they laid groundwork for a genre, and they've been around, like I said, been around since 81. They only have 62 employees. That's it.
Two?
As of 2019, they had 62 employees. that's it, which is crazy because other companies have hundreds upon hundreds, and admittedly they might be attached or owned by somebody else. And these guys, it's crazy how they're still around, which is awesome because I love the Yeez. Well, I love Yeez 8. Let me clarify that. I haven't played many of the other ones, but I loved Yeez 8.
Yeah, we own a couple of them. I actually did a playthroughs too. I'm gonna get Blake to do it, and we'll have it on the podcast. But I got Yeez 1 and 2, the original two games, are little pseudo remakes on Steam. So I need Blake to play through those so we can talk about get into the early years of Yeez on the podcast.
It was originally founded by a gentleman, Masayuki Kato, and he's still, as far as I can tell, he's still within the company, still working. So that's pretty awesome too. The game itself, Tokyo Xanadu, is Falcom making a Persona-like game. Is literally what it is. It's Persona-like. Is you travel around and you go into mementos, but they call it eclipse vortexes or eclipses, which are basically mind palaces and mementos. You also get you spend half your time going to school and then doing side quests in the real world, but some of your side quests end up you going into these vortices to do side quests and stuff. Now,
this is one that I didn't play, and the main reason I didn't play this is it looks. We had just did Crystar, which we talked about on the podcast, a month or two prior, and this looks like doesn't visually look like it, but kind of looks like we're doing the same thing as we were doing, like running through dungeons and talking to people, then running through a dungeon, then talking to people. And I was not in the very anime look, and I was even for Falcom, I was not ready to do that again.
Yeah, it does have VO, but it's all Japanese VO voiceover. You play as Ko Tokusaki. And then you go to his school, you eventually get a couple of people, you get a total of, counting him, you get 6 party members. Now, unlike the Personas, this isn't a 3 to 4 people in a turn-based combat situation, it's an action combat. But each character has a distinct playstyle, and each character has an element, you know, the basic elements, earth, air, fire, water, light, dark. Each one has one of those.
Earth, wind, fire, water, heart.
By your powers combined, I am Don Cheadle in the Captain Planet outfit. Those are hilarious videos. But it does, like I said, it's action combat, but it's action combat with a single party member. There's like, I think you, as you go through the combat, you fill up like an assist meter that you can hit, and the character will come in and swing. But when they come in and swing, they're also switching to that character. And of the two characters that I got, well, you play as a third character, but they don't join your party right away. And there's kind of some sort of mystery character all draped in white, wielding a big old sword. But your main character has it's like a shield attached to his arm that it shoots out like a whip sword, and it recoils back. It's a pretty cool little weapon. And then the girl you get, Ahsoka Higuragi, she uses a rapier. She's ice-based. I'll go ahead and say it now. I don't think I'm the biggest Persona fan. Like, I didn't much care for high school when I was in it. It wasn't my glory days or any of that crap. It was stupid high school where I was smarter than some of the teachers I went to school with, and some of the teachers got arrested for drugs and touching kids. It's not a great... High school's not great. I don't know why people flock to re-experience high school.
So many TV shows. It's a whole lot of Japanese culture, a lot of American culture too. It's just,
yeah,
so many TV shows about kids being in freaking high school, and it's just not
my cup of tea.
Yeah.
But and so you get all these characters and you start doing all these missions, and I played for a couple of nights because I was like, I could get into this, and then I just got bored. Some of the characters you're talking to, like, maybe they get more dimensional, but I just wasn't caring about anybody. I was like, I don't know you, I don't care about you, or you're like, oh, you can see these tropes coming from a mile away. The story wasn't hardly original. My main thing is, if you're gonna give me all these party members, let me use them. Like, you can have me an action combat system with 2 or 3 people, like the Yeez games, or like some Gambit systems, Christ, like 12.
We're not saying Crystar is leaps and bounds better than this in any way, but Crystar, you just hot swap.
What you do in this, but I don't want that. If you're gonna give me all these members, let me. We didn't even beat Crystar technically.
We got the first ending.
Yeah, and this is just. I've never been a big fan of that. Well, crap. Maybe I am. It just depends on how I feel about the game, really, because the Dynasty Warriors games do that.
I'm the one with this was just too like it's but like Gamefly. We could have got Crystar, or we could have got Tokyo Xanadu. It's just a luck of the draw. Whichever one came first, we would have played through Xanadu, and then we would have quit Crystar. I think it just depends. This is literally just whichever one came first.
Mm-hmm.
I got bored in Crystar too, but I kept playing it because it was kind of interesting.
I think I would have preferred to have gone through this, but they were so close together, and and I was so similar, and I hate running around to high school and
I guess you didn't
move
CrowdStar anymore. CrowdStar wasn't really a persona like it really, because you didn't have relationships, so you didn't go to high school in that game.
You just hung out in the girl's depressing room
with
her dog. But graphically it's pretty. It's an anime game.
It's like an anime game.
Yeah. It's an anime. It's got vibrant colors, it's got good locomotion, it's got some slight platforming, but it's not too terrible.
I wonder why the combat isn't, because this come out after Yeez 8?
I think, right, this came out, well, this was on, also, this is a port from the Vita, with all the DLC and all that stuff.
This might have came out before Yeez 8, originally, because it doesn't look as clean as Yeez 8 did.
Now, the EX Plus version of the game, which we played. I played, rather. You know, it came with graphical enhancements, frame rate enhancements, additional story, added side quests, and a post-game. Just they didn't clarify. They just said, and a post-game. So I'm assuming the game just ended after a certain point, but this allows you to go into, I'm sure, the hardest dungeon in the game and fight all the bosses again or do some sort of post-game build-up. Now, the point of the story is Ko can see things that other normal people can't. Oh, wow. And then while he's out following a girl who's being stalked, he sees her transform, magic girl style, but not really. She just pulls a sword out of nowhere and essentially kills two people, and he thinks that she murdered two people, but there were actually monsters in hiding, and they opened up a vortex, and he got sucked in accidentally. You go through the whole thing where he awakens his power because he's the one true hero, and then you go and you beat things, and then she's like, oh my gosh, I've never seen anyone do something like that before. You're the one. And she explains to him that she's a part of a group called Nemesis. And the whole point of them existing is they're a worldwide organization that goes around closing these eclipse vortexes. And they want you to join. And then as you go through, you recruit other people from your school to join. And like I said, everyone's got a different fighting style. I think one of the characters I got was a martial artist, you know, punches and kicks and everything. And it was fine. But like Drew said, it was... CrowdStar came first. Maybe I would have put more effort into this if I hadn't already put in an absorbent amount of time into CrowdStar.
Looking at it, this might be CrowdStar has a more distinct look to it. I could, because I'm watching gameplay of Tokyo Xanadu here while he's talking. CrowdStar does have a more unique look to it. Tokyo looks like your run-of-the-mill anime foray. I don't know how I have to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe it's good we play the more unique CrowdStar in a way. Maybe. CrowdStar had a more unique look, but incredibly repetitive dungeons.
Oh yeah, very much so.
So I don't know. This looks like your everyday anime crap right here. So I don't know. We're not super into the anime of things here.
One kind of cool thing is they actually did take inspiration from real world locations. There is this intersecting archway at the Tachikawa station. It's this archway, and then another archway goes over it, kind of like a dome, but it's just two arches intersecting. And they took that exact because it's a train station or a subway station, bus station. It's a public transport station, and they just literally copied and pasted it into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of cool that they took, you know, some real world locations, took a bunch of pictures and digitized them into the game. Now it's funny, because this is actually, I didn't realize this, Xanadu is a game series that they've made as well. There is Xanadu, which came out in 1985, and then Xanadu Next, which came out in 2005.
Yeah, I have Xanadu Next saved on my Steam wish list. It doesn't look anything like this.
I'm not entirely sure, because it says that the Xanadu game series are a spinoff of their original game called Dragon Slayer, which came out on the PC back in the day in 85. They did Dragon Slayer 1, 2, and 3, and this is Xanadu's were based off, particularly Dragon Slayer 2. And it's funny, because when this came out for the PS4, there was a fumble with some of the news outlets when they put the game out, when they took stuff, because this is called Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus, and someone misread the name, and they thought it was Tokyo Xanadu Next, a remake of the 2005 version. So they posted all this wrong information about it, saying that it was a remake and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of news outlets, game news, I had to, what do you call it? When you have to fix a misprint, whatever, recall or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there were all these people like, oh, our bad, we misread horribly the information.
Yeah, this looks nothing like this. Because I looked at Xanadu Next on the, I spotted Xanadu Next on the, my little PlayStation TV that I have, and I'm playing Mega Man Legends on.
Mm-hmm.
I was scrolling through games on there, and I saw it in the RPG section. I saw it was Neo you know, found them. I was like, oh, cool. I saw it on there. And, but then I think I saw it on Steam for like cheaper. And I was like, I want to save it on Steam and maybe just play it on Steam.
I do want to give a bit of a shout out because we don't always talk about publishers, but we're starting to talk about them a little bit more. This game was published and localized by XSEED Games. And they're responsible for bringing a lot of not mainstream or at the very least like on the downward slope of their popularity RPGs coming to us. Like, they're responsible for The Wild Arms 4 and 5 and a couple other things along those lines. Just trying to bring stuff, give stuff a chance, and they're the reason that it gets localized. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for them, and what's it?
Well, they didn't give English VO to this.
But they localized it. They gave you the English to read, and that's the, yeah. You know, they're, it's still a money-making business. They're not going to do a full-blown voiceover.
You would think, well, because Neo Falcon, let's say Falcon, Falcon's got really well respected games. You think they would put a little push on one of their other games?
You'd think, but meh. See if I have any. Unfortunately, like I said, I played it for a couple of nights. I got through like two dungeons, got three of the characters, and I was just like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. Oh no, there's a problem.
Oh no, don't do this for 40 hours.
It's like, oh no, there's a problem. I'm like, it's gonna be a vortex. You know, it's the whole point of the story, and none of the characters were multi-dimensional enough for me to care. Like, when you saw the character, unlike Personas, like, okay, I mean, I played Persona 5 for 120 hours.
Semi-regret it.
And I played it.
The greatest RPG ever made that everybody makes it out to be.
It's got some of the best style and best music of any RPG ever. And graphically, it's fine. But for, like, I'm supposed to care about these people, but there's some characters that the more I learned about them, the less I liked them. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh God.
The whole cast, pretty much.
A little bit, which I feel bad, and they kind of blew their load on, like, the first dungeon of the game. Like, there's so much, and then after that, there's cultural differences on what's deemed important and stuff between, between, you know, American values and Japanese values, what's deemed more important and culturally important.
You're getting off in the weeds here.
Yeah, sorry. Do you have, I think I told you to not, I think I'm the one, it's like,
well,
like,
I looked at it a couple times, and then the first night I was like, should I play this? And you're like, I'm not sure yet. And then by the second or third night I was like, should I play this? And you're like, nah, I think I'm gonna send it back. We have different ranges of tolerance. I can tolerate a shooter longer than you can. You can definitely tolerate anime BS longer than I can. I lose interest so fast in anime nonsense. And you will stick with something longer than I will. Same thing with shooters. You got pew pew and you get tired of it. I'll play all the way through a shooter campaign just because I like shooting people in the face. I'm an American. What can I say?
We take showers with our guns to keep us protected in there. I'm ready to dip out and jump into our third game.
Third and last game. This will be quick because I didn't play it very long either.
But again, this would be a thing where I have a lot to talk about when it comes to developer and stuff like that.
All right, well, let's go and jump into this last thing, okay. and we'll wrap this thing up.
Our third game is the massively loved Metroid Prime. This is the remaster, Metroid Prime Remaster, which came out February 8th, 2023. Now, the OG version came out November 2002 and was originally released in North America first, and it went until a year later did it come out in Japan and Europe.
That is very strange.
Mm-hmm. And I'll get into that now with the developer, which is called Retro Studios. They are based out of Austin, Texas, and they've been around since September 21st, 1998. And he had worked on video games. The founder, Jeff Spragenberg, it's a mouthful of a last name, Spragenberg. And he had worked on games before, and this was his first, how do you explain it, is there was interest in making another Metroid. And he was like, I'm going to give you my, what do you call it, he worked on a pitch, basically. And he went up there to, you know, he knew some people that knew some people, and he managed to actually get his foot in the door with Nintendo and speak to Miyamoto about an upcoming Metroid game. Because it had been in the works, but they couldn't get a story right, they couldn't figure out a new way to do Metroid, because they're like, we can't think of anything else. Everything seems to be going one way or another.
This is after Super Metroid.
Mm-hmm. Super Metroid 2 or something?
It's just Super Metroid.
Oh, there's Super Metroid, yeah. So he pitched somebody an idea, and they liked it so much that they brought it to Miyamoto and the other guy who's named... Oh, God, what is his name? It's Miyamoto and Kensuke Tanabe. And when it was brought up to them, it was suggested that they go visit these people to view this upcoming project that they have. So Miyamoto and Tanabe came to Retro after he sent them this short of what the game he wants to do. And they were given approval to do Metroid Prime.
That's wild. It never happens.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is Miyamoto was given, like they made the game and they had to run Miyamoto always has control over everything. Shigeru Miyamoto. To the point that they were probably about 25% into the game. And the game was originally a third person shooter. Mm-hmm. And Miyamoto was like, no, I don't like how this feels. They were showing him test demos and stuff. And he's like, I don't like this. It feels strange. And he's like, it doesn't fit the vibe of Metroid. He's like, I think the game will be better in first person. So make it first person. So they literally had to scrap everything.
He probably didn't say it that way.
I mean, no, but
he's a notoriously nice guy.
Well, it says his direct interference led to them having to go switch to first person because that's the way he wanted it. He said it would play better that way. Well, the problem is that when he did that, they didn't change the due date. So they had to restart from scratch, but with the same due date. So it caused everyone in the company to have to go work in 80 to 100 hour plus weeks to play catch up.
Yeah, and you can't just like, oh, they built all these maps for 25% of the thing. Just make it first person and use those same maps. You can't do that. When you design something like that, you design something for third person gameplay. You can't reuse that same stuff for first person gameplay. That's just not how we're not game developers, but when it comes to like building something to work with a certain perspective, that's just not how things, you gotta that's how it's designed. Like things would look different. Things would look strange. Things can look from third to first person. Games look completely different. They can look, your perspective changes so much and give and movement and stuff like that. Like imagine how you move in a game. Like you can't just so that he's talking about scrapping it completely. They would have to scrap. Now you use the ideas for some of the same rooms they do, but they'd have to change how the room was built to accommodate playing in first person.
Yeah. Now you said the game was made after Super Metroid, mm-hmm. but canonically it takes place between Metroid 1 and Metroid 2, mm-hmm. which is strange to do that. But
the whole franchise is like
yeah,
that.
It's so back.
That's not unheard of. I mean. Try to follow the chronology of Zelda.
fair. But with all that work, and now this was a passion project from the beginning for Jeff Spragenberg, and the director of the game, Mark Paichi. Pacini. Sorry. I don't know how to read my own handwriting sometimes. Now, with all this work, this passion project, they were putting in, like I said, 80 to 100 hours a week to play catch up and do this game. And the game came out, and it rocked. It sold.
Yeah, it's beloved.
Incredibly beloved. Like, it sold, like, this is going to sound like weak sauce numbers to certain today numbers, but it sold 2.8 million copies worldwide. Not Japan, but worldwide sold that many copies, and is by many critics considered one of the greatest video games of all time. Mm-hmm. To this point, even now, it is in the top five of the highest rated Metacritic games of all time. Like, even to this day, so many reviews, it is still considered top five highest approved greatest games of all time according to Metacritic and so many other people. And unfortunately, it did spawn 3 sequels, which each also would go on to become incredibly well received and everything, all directed by the same guy, Mark Paichi. It's actually kind of cool. Well, we spoke about this a little earlier. He only directed a couple of games, most of it being Metroid. They did get a chance because of how successful Metroid was to have a crack at another Nintendo property. They were given their choice, mm-hmm. and they chose Donkey Kong Country. So they did Donkey Kong Country Returns and Donkey Kong Country The Big Freeze. So they made both. They got to bring Revive, essentially.
We're not a Donkey Kong household, pretty much.
The Donkey Kong countries. But two other games that he helped direct that aren't necessarily related to Retro Arrow Studios, is he directed Batman Arkham Origins. What is it, Blackgate?
Is that a Vita game or something?
I think so, yeah.
Is that a Vita game or a DS game or something weird?
No, it means the Arkham game. It's Arkham Origins. It's like the Arkham
Yeah, I know Origins. That, but wasn't that Blackgate like a side game?
I think so. It was smaller.
Is it a handheld? Maybe a handheld? I don't remember. Maybe. I didn't play the Arkham. You played the Arkham games, not me.
Yeah. He also directed ReCore, which we didn't play a whole lot of.
He's the director of ReCore?
He's director of ReCore.
I thought the Mega Man guy did that.
Mm-mm. It says he was the director of ReCore, according to his page. Like I said, I didn't go further into
detail. That was a Capcom team in ReCore. Yeah. ReCore, another game I quit back in the day, pre-podcast.
It says, right here, says that he worked as the director, director of ReCore.
I got you. It's fine.
Well, he co-directed, but he was still a director, yeah. And probably, because I bring this up, because we just talked about this with Tormented Souls being a Resident Evil-like and everything. And he's getting huge applaud right now. Is he directed the VR version of Resident Evil 4?
I've played like the first hour and a half of that. Pretty cool.
So he's responsible for directing that.
It really is like Nintendo and Capcom ties.
Yeah, well, he has a couple of weird things. And some of the earlier ones before Metroid Prime was, this has project manager, so he didn't direct it, but he project managered for NHL Breakaway 99 and Torok Rage Wars in 99. And then 2002 made history. His third game made history. So follow your dreams, kids. Do what you love. And you'll never work a day in your life. Ha ha ha. Whatever. And like I said, it's incredibly well received. And this was originally on the GameCube and then ported up to the Wii. And then the remastered came out on the Switch. Mm-hmm. And it, for those who don't fully understand what we're talking about, it is a first-person Metroidvania, if you will. Mm-hmm. But their main thing was, like, there's always combat in Metroids, but they wanted to focus on exploration over combat. And I think they did that because the third-person view allowed you a new aspect, a different way of looking at things, and they loved it. Mm-hmm. Now, I watched you play this, and it looked cool.
Yeah,
you even talked about how much you enjoyed playing it.
Yeah, I might. This could be one of those games on the GameFly that I come back to. I think we had a bunch of other games happening.
We had like two or three games leaving Game Pass and...
Had a bunch of stuff going on. I was like kind of a little bit into this. And I was kind of like... I played it like two different nights, I guess. And I played it enough. I played all the way through to the... I beat the first boss. I don't know if you could play things out of order in this game or not. Because I don't know a whole lot about Metroid. But I played the big plant boss. There's a giant plant boss you fight. And the boss was kind of like Zelda back in the day. Because my thoughts for Prime were like... I've talked about before. Like sometimes people's favorite games and stuff depends on... when they played it, like, yeah. For talk about with like our easiest examples, bring up our cousin Daniel again. Like a lot of his favorite Zelda, like his favorite Zelda, I think, is Link to the Past, and favorite Metroid, Super Metroid. Like he grew up on the Super. He's a few years, like three years older than me. Maybe. So he grew up. He had all the 2D side scrolling stuff. But when I got really got into stuff heavy, I was in the N64 era. So I love Ocarina of Time. I somehow missed. So this is my. I feel like Metroid Prime. I had too much in my head. I thought Metroid Prime would be my Metroid Ocarina of Time. And I just didn't play it back in the day. I don't know if we even had we have a GameCube back in the day?
I think we were maybe...
We have one now, looking at it, but like, did we just play Mario Party? I don't remember like having
we were playing like the RPGs. We were playing our favorite genres. We were playing like the Skies of Arcadia and stuff like that.
Mario Party.
Played...
I somehow missed.
We gave Star Fox Adventure a go. We had that baby Triceratops.
Yeah, so somehow just missed Metroid Prime. But I was hoping it would be come along me. It'd be like my Metroid Ocarina of Time. I did like what I was playing. I think we just had too many other games. It was just too much stuff. We're kind of running into this right now. We got too many games in motion, and we don't like that. We tend to have like a main focus game, and then we'll piddle in, and then our side stuff is we work on GameFly and sometimes GamePad. But sometimes there's too many things happen at once. I think that's kind of where we were at Metroid Prime.
Too many things.
So I might end up getting it again. I might end up just buying it because I mean just to have it. I kind of want to go back to it.
You weren't mad at it at all. You weren't even stuck. You knew exactly where you were
going. Yeah, I went down somewhere I probably shouldn't have gone down to. I went down to the fire area, and I didn't have...
Fire protection.
I didn't have any kind of protection or any kind of anything to be down there, and I worked my... My problem was because it saves, like, the save rooms. I worked my way deep down to the fireplace till I found a save room. I was like... And my next thought was, like, when I turn this back on, I probably got to find my way back out of here so I can go get preparation. Mm-hmm. And I got caught up in other games, and...
You
don't warp. No, you just kind of... It's all... The game's about exploration and movement. Work your way around and learn the map and movement and stuff like that.
She's a tiny little ball just throwing in one of those pneumatic tubes like you do at the bank and just foop to the next area.
That's not a thing. It's funny. Like you said, you get on the gameplay a little bit. Like it is in first person. It looks really cool, like your HUD, stuff like that looks really cool. You mentioned the combat, they wanted it to be exploration focused, so you have like a, you can aim if you want, but like you really, you have a lock on, you can just lock on the enemies and she just locks onto them and you start firing, so like combat's kind of, some of the difficulty of combat's taken out there.
I have a, I guess an anecdote or a note. I have never beaten a Metroid, and I haven't really played too many. Like I think I've played some of the original ones, because everyone talks about how great Metroid is and that Metroidvanias come from Metroid and Castlevania, but the furthest one I ever played was on the Game Boy Advance, was Metroid Fusion.
Fusion's the only one I ever beat, and I don't know why.
I don't
have a history of Metroid games, and we had Metroid, somehow ended up Metroid Fusion on the Game Boy Advance, and I played all the way through it, and I don't know why.
Well, because it was a game we had when we were hanging out with part of our youth. Our mom worked at a Waffle House.
She managed
a Waffle House, and so she would go in to do the third shift, or the switch from second shift to third shift count of the money, and because she was manager, we got to eat for free as long as we didn't eat steak. And so she would take us there, and from like 8 p.m. to midnight some nights, we would just sit there and eat Waffle House food for free, and
play our Game Boys,
and play Game Boys, read books, play card games, we'd even bring some of our friends with us, and we would just hang out there.
Eat and play games.
We played like a round or two of like D&D and stuff like that. We would just hang out there for hours. You know, it was a weird dreamland where you just got to eat Waffle House food for free and play video games for hours on end. Weird. And didn't have to pay a cent. Yeah. I think if we had got steak, she paid half price. If we got chicken, she paid like 75 cents.
That's not important.
But it was 99% free. And most of the time, no one even charged us. They just like, oh, bad product. They wrote it off and we got it for free anyway. But like I said, I've never finished a Metroid. But the strangest thing of that for me, now this is almost kind of out of the blue, but Samus is my main character that I play in Smash Brothers. I'm not even like the biggest fan of Metroid, but she's just the person I gravitate to. Not Zero Suit Samus, she's not bad either, but actual Samus. Charging up that power shot, blasting people, rockets, dropping mines on people.
Maybe it won't play the same way, obviously. Maybe you should have played Prime. But...
Well, I wanted to, but we just, like I said, we were juggling too many things, and because we had it on Gamefly, and I'd rather we send something back on Gamefly and get it and just try it later, because I don't want to hold on to something for a month, two.
It just sits there. A month or two, you should have just bought the game.
Exactly. So I'd rather just send it back, and the stuff that's leaving Game Pass and stuff like that, it's a little more precedent because it will be gone. And I wanted to play it. It looked like it ran smooth.
It plays good.
Looks very pretty. And this is the remaster. It looks good.
And thankfully, you can play modern controls, so you can play with the there's that boss too. I forgot I did that. The first boss is this thing you fight in the prologue. I guess we got the gameplay playing in the background again. So you do fight this first boss.
Things gross looking.
Yeah, kind of looks like a Metroid, I guess. Parasite Queen, it's called. So I did fight that. So first boss. So I guess the second boss is technically the little bug thing, not little big bug thing. Yeah, we'll have to go back to this, and I think you might want to give it a shot too. So it's on the Gamefly episode right now. We might come back around to it eventually if we ended up buying. I might just buy it off of Gamefly or buy it from somewhere, and we'll sit down to a full playthrough of it. One thing that I didn't like about it, and I've read this was a complaint about the thing in general. It's weird because it's like fixed in other games, but wasn't fixed in this one. Was a marker on your map telling you there's something else, because it's a Metroidvania. It's about clearing, you know, going to the area, finding secrets and getting upgrades. There's not an indicator on your map, at least not that I saw. And I think I read other places that people say it too. There's not an indicator on your map that there's something left in that room. So I don't know how. I don't. You just know, you know, going back somewhere and not knowing if something's actually in that room. You have to kind of remember, like, oh, I couldn't get through. I didn't have the power up to like the magnet thing to roll your ball around the stuff or whatever, or the bomb jumps, that kind of stuff. I didn't, you know, you remember, you don't, you, when you get the upgrades, we don't remember what rooms.
Yeah, you
had
put
a marker.
At the very least, put like a red X on it or a green circle if you're good to go back.
Just anything, any kind of indicator. And I remember looking at my map, like when I was getting up, when I was playing, because I probably should have just kept playing, honestly. But when I played it, I was just like, maybe I should. I don't know if I need to go back to this room or what room it was. But leaving it to you to remember where all the crap is, I mean,
I hate that.
Yeah, and I feel like they've done it, because I've heard other podcasts talk about the other Metroid, like the Kane and Rick. I talk about the Kane and Rince podcast. I listen to them do through the Metroid Prime series, Metroid, all the Metroid series. And I think they talk about other of the side-scrolling ones, at least have the...
like a mini-map?
Well, they all have mini-maps. Yeah. All of them do. But like, you have a map, an indicator on the map, there's something left in that room. So you know to go back to that specific room and get some stuff. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it besides, like, I do kind of wish I would have played it all the way through. I think we'll go back to it. You didn't get a chance to play it.
Not really.
I didn't tell you not to play it. I think we were both kind of buried. I was like, we got other stuff to focus on. Let's send this back and
we
got to
clear the board a little bit.
But this has happened a couple of times with Gamefly game. What happened with something we want to go back to, like Elix. We want to go back to Elix. It was open world RPG. We just did it recently. We'll say we just did it recently. We had Biomutant on the Gamefly. We just sent it back, not because we didn't like Biomutant. Biomutant we probably won't bring up on a Gamefly episode because we intend to go back to it, which maybe what we should have done with this game.
Yeah, but
Biomutant was open world, and we've stumbled into multiple open world games all at once, and there's nothing Blake hates more than open world game.
I don't like them,
and he's getting kind of wore out. But we kind of fell into a bunch of them kind of through
Gamefly and through, because it was just a bunch. I'm counting right now. It was like six back to back
open world nonsense. Yeah,
yeah. And I was just like,
yeah, I'm on the tail end. I got one last DLC of Assassin's Creed Origins. I did everything in Assassin's Creed Origins. I got to beat the DLC. So Origins was huge. We fell into that. And we had.
Well, for me, I'm juggling. I'm doing my first playthrough of Death Stranding, and then that was immediately we got the Gamefly game for God of War Ragnarok, mm-hmm. which we spoke about not too long ago, last episode, I believe. But we had that on Gamefly. We would keep it through Gamefly dollars and really, really cheap. And then we got The Surge, and then, which is a third person exploring Dark Souls like.
It'd be on the podcast. Yeah.
And then we got a Biomutant, and then we got there's something else.
Edge of Eternity.
We're going through Game Pass, a game called Edge of Eternity, which is an open world action RPG.
It's a turn based. You said everything. Semi open world turn based RPG. Yeah. Too many. It's too much stuff back. Too many larger things back to back.
And first and foremost, my least favorite game, like top. First and foremost, I hate sports games. I don't play sports games. I just bah humbug. Anything past NFL Street, NFL Blitz, like the fun ones. Now they're actual like sports games. No, thank you. I don't care for racing games, which I guess you also count that as a sport game. Mm-hmm. I just don't like nowadays. Open world games are every, like, if it's bigger, it's better. If it's bigger, it's better. I will never play. I don't care how good it is. I will never play Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild. I will never touch it, and I will never play the sequel, Tears of the Kingdom, because they made it so big that now they charge $10 extra for video games, and other companies are like, oh, we should definitely charge $10 extra for our game, but we're also going to continue to charge you for the season pass, for all the DLC content, and all this other crap. And I'm not playing an open. I hate them.
You don't have the time. I'm still doing. I still play. I was playing Assassin's Creed Origins. I still play the games that are good. It's just, I don't know. I like an open world thing sometimes, but it's so easy to get exhausted by them.
Yeah,
Running across a map just to get somewhere to do something.
And half the time you explore, it's nothing. Or
I just quit and sold. Let me wrap this podcast up. We're just gabbing now. Yeah. Not talking about Metroid. I just quit and sold Xenoblade Chronicles, the first one, definitive edition, because you just walk in that game all the freaking time, and there's no
reward.
There's no reward anywhere. There's no treasure hidden chest. You're just walking and walking and walking and walking and walking and walking and walking. You most of the time spent in Xenoblade Chronicles is walking.
It's like the Lord of the Rings of video games. You just walk.
Yeah. Honestly, not to exaggerate. People who love, like, be like, it's a beloved game as well. Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. I feel like even though people couldn't say you don't walk too much. It's all you do in that game.
Also, kind of funny, you bring up Xenoblade Chronicles. In one of the Smash Brothers, Shulk was your main.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
which I think is really funny.
I started maining Shulk in Smash Brothers because I like his little time stopping time powers.
But I didn't care for the game.
Yeah, I actually played. Well, no, I played like 25 hours of Xenoblade Chronicles.
I played a lot.
Yeah,
I played like
so bored by that for so immensely. Xenoblade Chronicles got to the point where I was, and this is how me and Blake usually quit things. I dreaded turning on Xenoblade Chronicles, and that's no way to play a video game.
Nope.
So we took it off. I sold it, and I had actually pre-ordered back in the day of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, because I thought we were gonna like the franchise. Just didn't even turn on Xenoblade 2. Anyway, we are
far off into the weeds. You ready to wrap this up?
Wrap it up. So Metroid Prime's cool. It's something we'll probably, I kind of want to go back to. So if it comes back around the podcast, freaking years from, who knows when things come back around this podcast, if they ever do. We're trying to do another RPG before too long, which will be wrapping back around to, like, it'll be sort of wrapping back around to our first episode, if we, that's a hint for anything. We haven't started the game yet, but there's a game we want to do that might wrap around to our first episode. We both got to play it first.
Yeah, I got to get through all this new stuff before I go back to old stuff.
Yeah, so we're just drowning in games right now. I guess it's hurting for choice. Not hurting for choice, spoiled for choice.
You ready to wrap up?
Yeah, that's all I got. So we'll wrap things up here like we've been doing. I want to thank Jared and the guys of Emerge for letting us have the song Letting Go for our intro. We really, really like that. We really love it, actually. I always say it sometimes. It's probably the best part of the podcast. You listen to the intro, and then you stop the podcast and go look the band up. Our feelings aren't hurt by that.
Oh, I do want to thank anybody who tuned in to it. Emerge did have a chance to play Louder Than Life. Yeah. They were one of 12 bands that were on like a bracket tier voting list.
16 bands.
16. And they made it to the semifinals.
They did get to the finals. We're pretty sure Blake got Blake's one because Blake's phone was messing up and he was trying to vote. And I think his vote went through like the last second. It was a very tense moment that got them. So we like to say Blake got them into the finals.
They literally won by 2 votes.
Yeah.
But I want to, you know, it was cool. Unfortunately, they didn't make it, you know, because it got into the last 2 people got to go and they were like the third. So, yeah. But
they yeah. won't, he won't, Jared's too nice to ever say it, but they really lost to some really generic emo bullcrap band. There's a lot of not good bands on that thing. And like, I'm not in the music business, so I could say it. I've talked to Jared about music before and he won't say anything bad about anybody because he's just nice, and two, you don't do that in the industry. So I'm not in the industry, but like of the 16 bands, even if I didn't know Jared and Emerge in general, Emerge was the only unique band of those 16 bands. Like everything else was, there was emo pop rock, and then there was the entire lineup
that was
both sides, and it was like Emerge was the only unique band that entire thing. Now they did get to the finals, which is great, but follow Emerge on your social media, stuff like that, and you know, follow Emerge so next time something like that comes up you can just drop in, because all you do is drop into a thing on Twitch and yeah. like you voted when their song played, you just voted for one of their songs. Actually, their second song they played was the song they didn't do Letting Go. Maybe they should have. Maybe they would have won if they did Letting Go. But they did do Coward, because they submitted three. They submit multiple songs to the contest. They did do Coward, which is the original song we played from them on the podcast.
Coward's a badass song,
which was pretty cool. But anyway, so follow them and support them. They do tours and stuff like that, and hopefully new music coming out. And just go see them and, you know, tell them the guys, you know, Drew and Blake from Lock, Stock, Two Smoke Controllers sent you. We saw them live a couple of months ago. It was great to see Jared and
hang out with them afterward.
Yeah, so that was cool. So there's all of that. So follow them, support them, buy their stuff, and then help them next time there's like a big, like a little thing. Because they got that, you know, that close to playing Louder Than Life, and that's a big 3-day festival. It's a big deal. Lots of big bands there. A lot of eyes on the band, which would have been great for them, which they deserved it more than the people who made it, for sure. I guess everybody works hard. Even when your music's generic, you work really hard to think you're sounding unique. But I'll stop that.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, we want to thank Mladen Markovic, aka Devious Pixel, for the art for our podcast. We'll probably have a new 100th episode art I want to get with him about pretty soon. So we want to thank him for that. Roll back, if you're new to the podcast, roll back to an episode where you see his name on one, I forget which episode it was, but we had Mladen on. We talked about art and everything like that, and his influences, and a little bit about video games. We did a little interview with him. It was pretty cool. He's a very nice guy. Follow us at twitch.tv/2smokingcontrollers and come to our streams with our cousin Brian. We're currently working our way through Division 2. The game is okay. It's a smidge boring, so we don't like people come here and talk to us about other games maybe, because we actually want to beat it. We have a couple of games we've co-op that we didn't complete, so we're trying to get to where we try to complete some of these games if they're not so bad. This game's not bad, it's just there's a lot of tedium to it, it seems, because we want to beat this and move on to I don't know if you already said on here, but after this we're doing Diablo 2, not 4. We're going to do Diablo 2 together after that. So come to the Twitch streams, hang out with us, and then eventually you can, you know, talk to us, and then we could talk about that on the podcast episodes we do with Brian. So that's all I got, and we'll catch you guys when this comes out, and in a couple weeks when we do another one.
Real quick, I want to tag on to what Drew just said for both thanking Mladen and Jared. We actually had both of them on the podcast. Episode 70 is Mladen's, and episode, I believe it was 50. I just looked at it. 50 is Jared's episode from Emerge.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to those and, you know, hang out with us on them. I want to do just a tiny little bit of self-promotion. I do have a short story that I have self-published through Amazon called They Come This Night. It's free if you have Kindle Unlimited. It's just $1 otherwise. Please rate, review that. Keep me alive and in the algorithm. It's a pretty cool little second-person home invasion colonial time story. It's I loved it because I wrote it. And I also have, we have a brother podcast that has spawned from this one called Action, the Movie Podcast, where myself and our good buddy, Steve, take turns semi-surprising one another with movies that we do not discuss until we actually record so that each other's opinion doesn't affect the others about the movie. And we get deep dive actors, directors, writers, you know, cool scenes, but you know, techniques. Check that out too, please. With that, I want to wish everybody a good evening and good night.